Hello and welcome to No Killing Goblins. Or Dragonus, fucking Christ. Quick, beep out my real name so it sounds like I said something incredibly dirty.
I mean,
I'm Dragonus, and this is.
really, really trying not to laugh out loud, really, really hard, Oshi.
And we are here today to talk about a special event, a bit of a break in our normal coverage. But before we get to that, there is some great and interesting news out there in the world.
Yeah, there is, but I just want to get over a happy birthday belatedly. Dragonus, that is your name.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. I know more people that call me Dragonus than actually call me by my actual name at this point.
I mean,
If I don't count coworkers and casual friends that I have a pint with every now and then.
at this point, it's actually just become my name. My username for 15 years has just become my name, so I'm not even sure what else to tell you. Like, that's who I am now. I have such a weird, like, relationship with names. I think I even ranted about it here and talked about the fact that I have, like, six or seven names.
Yeah, I don't know if you've talked about it on the podcast, but I know we've talked about it before.
I don't remember. Things blend. This is why we need to like have a recording device on us at all times.
Oh, no, I'd rather not have every thought that I have recorded for posterity. I already occasionally feel like going back and deleting my entire internet history and unpersoning myself for everything that I've ever said,
The
ever.
cringe that we the cringe of our past, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. I mean, then I look at it, if you don't cringe at your past self, then clearly you aren't changing enough. You know what? Good change, bad change. It's important to at least change. Do you know what else has changed, Oshi?
God, are we. You
Isekai is
are.
in the Oxford English Dictionary now.
Fine. We're pushing forward and chatting less. Fine. Yes, Isekai has
Well,
been.
I want to chat about this, so I wanted to get it out there.
Okay, fine, fine. You're the host today. Isekai added. The word Isekai, by the way, is what we're talking about, has been added to the Oxford English Dictionary in March of 2024. It is. I mean, I read the BBC article and it was like pretty straightforward. They just added the word. Like, it is now a. English has done what it always done and mopped another word from another language.
It's not like we're the only people on Earth who do that. But I find it interesting just because. What are the odds this means that I never have to read the phrase Portal Fantasy from some Western publisher desperately trying to add a veneer of legitimacy to the Japanese word they don't want to use? It's in the dictionary now. Just use it.
I don't think that's gonna change because I bet you Portal Fantasy will become the acceptable what's the word I'm looking for? High versus low, what's the fucking highbrow language? And Isekai will become the trash language. By the way, for anyone who doesn't know what mopped means, it means steal. Just I've been listening to house music to Renaissance from Beyonce, so there's a lot of house music, and I think I've reverted language a little bit, cause you know what else came out recently, and the new Beyonce album, Cowboy Carter.
Yeah, yet again, her just kind of dropping another album as a little bit of a fun surprise.
Was it? I mean, she kind of announced it this time around. It was like a week, week and a half ahead of time or something, 2 weeks ahead of time. Plus, she
That
fucking.
is still very little run-up compared to most artists.
To be fair, she gets leaked a lot. Like, people just. I mean, she's Beyonce. People will, like, foam at the mouth until they have it. Did you listen to any of the songs?
I have not yet. I actually had missed this getting dropped until today, and I've just been busy today.
Well, I will basically spoil everything for you because I don't give a shit. So it's a I typically don't like. I mean, everybody listened to Renaissance because it dropped during the pandemic and it was fucking amazing. And if you're a queer person and you didn't listen to Renaissance, you're a fucking idiot. But this one dropped, and I have this weird relationship with country music, where I feel like a 700-year-old woman, or at least 700 years, because I can't. I literally hear in my mouth, "Well, that's not country. That's just, talk about cowboys and girls and trucks. What happened to the storytelling?" I feel so old when I say that in my head. I really like Dolly Parton. We both not love Dolly Parton.
I grew up down south in Tennessee, and I know what you're talking about. And I don't even think it's all entirely gone,
Oh no,
although
it's
in the
not
last
gone.
like f
No,
yeah,
no,
the last 5 years or so have been a real fucking
it's sad.
dead zone. But I
It's
mean,
very sad.
it pop moves its way in and moves its way out, and they tried pushing the idea of more rap and spoken verse in country, and that has had mixed results, not the least of which because probably one of the best songs like that kind of popped in from entirely outside the Nashville ecosystem, so they panicked. And they tried to pretend Old Town Road wasn't country, and I will not stand
Oh
for
my
it.
God, that was so embarrassing. Plus, a lot of like the underground country stuff tends to be they want to keep the traditional like storytelling elements, but they're busy trying to develop something new, and they're doing it separate. And of course, they're not welcome in Nashville because Nashville has its own traditions, and traditions ossify in the South or something. But we're not gonna critique that stuff here. The point I was trying to make was. I think the tagline for this album that Beyonce came up with it, this ain't a country album, it's a Beyonce album. And so the entire album is like this, God, I'm gonna sound so pretentious when I say sonic journey, I guess. She did a lot of genre mixing. It's nothing like radically new. Beyonce does her own version of everything. It's all about like her vision, the way she wants to do things, that's always how it's been. And for this one, she fully like sap like the first song in the album, she samples Queen on the first line. Like it's Bohemian Rhapsody as a start. And it's basically a message to the CMAs and to Nashville about how fuck y'all, cause I'm better than you. And then she like does what she always does. She brings in artists and like Willie L Nelson's on it. The first black woman to ever like Linda something. I always forget. She had a country album, was really great. She never got her due, and she's like 80 years old now, and she's now on the album. And they talk about genres and how like limiting it can be. It's just such good. Like I had a list of like six songs from it that are just like bangers, including that the she of course she did a dance, like there's a fucking song called Ya Ya that's basically you can dance to it. She did this beautiful song called Daughter, and in the middle, like halfway through the song, she fully breaks out into opera. I'm not like she fully breaks out into opera. The cover of Blackbirds is amazing. She did her own rendition of Jolene. Actually, I thought that was the weakest one because it's not because the song was bad or the performance was bad. That's impossible. Fuck that. It's because there's an ironic. So she changed the lyrics so that she's warning off Jolene instead of like lamenting about Jolene's ability to like siren song the husband. It says she's doing what Beyonce would do, which is telling that girl, "I'm gonna beat the shit out of you. Get the fuck out of my way. Don't be coming near my." Yeah, and it's great, but at the same time, immediately I thought, "Oh, didn't we just do this with Lemonade?"
I don't that just suddenly reminded me of like one of the my favorite internet memes floating around, which Which is about how when you listen to the song Jolene and this almost like intangible power this woman seems to have over like all the men around her, all I can think of is like, Jolene is like a fae. Those are not human descriptions that are being given here. This is inhumanly beautiful.
Yeah, but
And then it
that's.
cuts into like talk. God, I do not remember the specific lyrics, but it added in a bunch of fake lyrics that are just like clearly describing some horrible eldritch fae here to tempt away. And now I just pictured that mental image of like Fae, she, Jolene, just getting punched in the face repeatedly by
Oh,
Beyoncé.
not even that. I saw the meme of, I think it was from a horror movie or something, where a woman literally beats a girl and drags her up and down some stairs by her hair. That was fully what I thought was about to happen to her. Like, it's a, like, you'll listen to it, you'll be shocked by it, but be like, oh yeah, this is actually not that bad. The best part was the intro to it was Dolly, of course, did the intro to it. She did a short, like, 6 second intro to it. It was, she references Becky with the good hair versus Jolene. Like, that was, for the half these people don't even know who fucking Becky with the good hair is, but all right. The
Yeah,
other
it'll be a great opportunity for them to learn.
the other big piece to this that I was like kind of shook me. Like, there's lots of things that shook me, but this one was more because I feel like they never do this anymore. There was a duet with Miley Cyrus and Beyonce, and it's Wanted 2, or I think is the track name, and it's the two of them. They and I mean a real duet. This is not something where they, like, Miley sings for like 12 seconds. And that's why she gets the credit thing. They sing from the start to finish. They actually pa like a call and response to the thing. They talk to each other sonically, and then they fully sing together. And the songs are blended, and the harmonies are like so. Sorry, the song is well blended and produced, and the harmonies are so good. Miley's more raspy voice, and Beyonce's sort of like, I mean, she's fucking Beyonce, so let's they soar to the rafters together, and it's so fucking good. I was shocked, like, that came out, and they never do that anymore. Duets are not a thing anymore. Like, I love that. When did people stop doing that kind of stuff?
I have no idea.
Like, every album, every, like, fucking song has somebody coming in and singing, like, half a bar or something, and they get a full credit for the song, and you're like, and every time I'm thinking, like, oh, Dua Lipa's on this. Okay, she's, oh, so she sang two lines that they recorded over, and she just repeats it occasionally. That's it. Meanwhile, like, there's nothing to the song, no depth. Like, this is truly, it's like June Carter and Johnny. My God, help me with names here. Ugh.
I'm not 100% certain what you're where you're going here. I don't know what names you're looking for.
Remember the stupid, you know what? I'm just gonna let it go. My name, I'm shitty with names. Just country music tends to have, like, couples and pairs and folks who sing together, and that's big about singing together. It was a really good album. It's still a really good album. I have to listen to it for the third time just so I can, like, feed off the energy. I literally listened to 16 Carriages on repeat for like 5 hours. Yeah, it was good. That was my contribution.
I will pop it on so I can listen to it while I'm getting the new PC built. Which, yeah, I'm building a new PC, everybody.
Be ready for the
Pretty
dance.
much.
Be ready for the dance music. It was, the blends are so, like, you'll see. What's the new PC gonna be? What's the specs gonna be?
I'm keeping my graphics card, which I just bought last year. It's nothing too fancy, just Radeon RX 790. Or 7900, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is getting replaced. New Ryzen 7800 3XD, new motherboard, upgrading my RAM to some fancy Trident AGB RAM because it was on a good deal. And I'm trying out liquid cooling for the first time. Nothing fancy, no custom rig, just an all-in-one thing just to give it a shot. And hopefully, when I put it all together, it'll all start.
I hope so. I'm grateful that you waited for afterwards to do this.
It's a sign of my love for you all because I've had this for hours and was just waiting.
All right. Other big book news is that the Hugo finalists for 2024 came out. The number of ballots is like 1,420, but apparently that's enough. It's in Glasgow this year in August. And I think the comment from Kyler is, anyone read any of these? And my response is, yes, I have. I've read John Scalzi's book, I've read Anne Leckie's book, I've read Martha Wells' book, I have Shannon Chakrabarty's book on literally on my TBR pile. I think I read The Saint of Bright Doors. Yes, I did. It's somewhere here. I remember this.
I pretty much missed all of this, except for until you get into the longshoreman for short form for dramatic presentation, which is just movies and TV shows but with fancier naming. I watched pretty much everything in both categories.
What,
I'm
for the dramatic long form thing? Like Barbie and
and short
stuff?
form.
Oh,
Yeah,
okay.
it's their movies and TV shows section. I think I might have read some of these comics, but I go through so many comic books, I begin to sort of blur them. Saga. I know I read. I keep up with Saga. Yeah, I've not read any else of these.
It's nice that Star Trek got like two episodes this
Yeah,
go
it's
around.
because Strange New Worlds is the shit. It's the best Star Trek thing since The Next Generation.
I live in just absolute fear of the moment when Paramount goes like, okay, now it's time to cut Star Trek.
Nah, there is always a possibility of that, but honestly, Strange New Worlds just does well, and Star Trek as a franchise is way too valuable.
Yeah, but there's
There's
value,
a
and then
possibility
there's.
that they might do a third season and decide they're done, but.
Yeah. I mean, it's we do like I'm hoping that they revert back to a little bit of a longer season. We had this whole talk about it, but I don't
Yeah.
know. I the way things have been going.
I miss genuinely long seasons, right?
For
Where the
TV, for
effects
TV.
were way che- yeah, but I where the effects were way cheaper, and I will admit that there is a little bit of something that could be lost there, but having, 20, 30 fucking
I don't need
50 minute
yeah,
sessions.
I don't need every episode to be a full spacewalk. Like, half of the enjoyment of Star Trek for me wasn't the alien races or the space battles. This is not. It wasn't the space
It's the
battles.
characters.
Yeah, it was the characters.
Having a lot of episodes gives you a lot more time to flesh out characters and the world and do more interesting stuff with it.
More than that.
I'm convinced to this day that it is one of the things that ruined Discovery for me. If Discovery had been a full 26 episode season, hear me out here, they would have had the opportunity to actually make that first part of the first episode where I got Michelle Yeoh as a proper starship captain and was most excited for that. You could have done 7 or 8 episodes of the first season as that, helped establish a status quo. Because, and this is a problem I actually have with a lot of this short form television, everything wants to rapidly establish a status quo and then break it as quickly as possible so that they can it's good storytelling, right? Break the status quo, create a shakeup. The new season then can start on new grounds. You can do the second half of the season on new terms and all of this other great stuff. But when you rush it because you just don't have enough episodes, that's how you get The Legend of Korra. And we don't want The Legend of Korra, season one, especially. At least I don't.
Okay. I just really, really wish that the challenge existed there for special effects and stuff instead of constantly going bigger and bigger and bigger. Instead, they had to use a more limited budget to try to like bridge the gap and figure out how to do things on a smaller scale. I mean, it is the small screen for a reason, and I wish that instead of like, I wish they did more stuff like the crossover episode with the with Lower Decks. It didn't have a huge amount, like it had a lot of special effects. Let's be real, it's still yeah, but it's comparatively speaking, it didn't have a whole and it, a lot, and it was it.
It was a fun, silly little episode. And I say that as somebody who doesn't even like Lower Decks. I think it was a great episode, right?
It was
Like.
it's part of that, but what I'm trying to say is like it the whole episode floated not on the special effects. It floated on the actor's ability to sell us the fucking time travel, on the fact that the characters were interesting and compelling and they made notes and they genuinely loved where they were and what they were and that they had a character
And
full character arc, right?
that is one of those ones that got nominated, that and Subspace Rhapsody,
Yeah.
which I don't think they picked the two best episodes from the season, but
Which
it
one was
definitely wound
Subspace
up being the
Rhapsody?
two buzziest episodes of the season.
Wait, which one was, is that the musical? Oh, God. Okay.
The musical episode, I don't know. I'm still bitter about the Klingons. I love the K-pop Klingons as a punchline, but I also think it would have been better to get at least one or one more Klingon song, and maybe even get the Klingons singing along at the end, considering that the whole building theme of that episode
I mean
was about getting people to work together with a unity of purpose.
the
But
fact
I
that they
wanted my Klingon opera.
I was more offended that they
In
didn't
traditional Klingon would be better.
I was more offended by the fact that they didn't do a sea shanty level of Klingon because it was like the perfect moment to finally accept that of course Klingons would have really cool sea shanties. Of course they would.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't want just
And
opera. I want a full-on TikTok level sea shanty done by a like the seven dudes who talk about what was the fucking one. I don't know. There's that sea shanty band now that exists that sells like a million records.
yeah, I know the one you're talking about. I'm also a little sad there was no Gilbert and Sullivan, just because getting Data to sing Gilbert and Sullivan is one of my other favorite scenes in all of Star Trek. But, you can only fit so much into a story.
True
Still,
enough.
it's kind of sad. I feel so, I don't know what the best way to put this is just distanced from a lot of like the art and stuff and novels and that used to be all I did all day because I'm just so busy. But also, I don't know, just a lot of stuff I don't really seem to have the energy for. Like, most of what I read is stuff I've already read or stuff that gets immediately recommended to me.
I
And
guess.
usually that's a lot of web serials, like traditional publishing, I just keep bouncing off of.
I had to work for it. That's the, like, I listed off a bunch of the Hugo novel nominees that I read, but I had to work, like, to read those. I had to set aside time and actually put myself at, like, tell myself, you have to read this. And I actually forced myself to go through the first book or two, and then after that, you just realize that you can do what you always did for every book. You can make it a little part of your life. And we both read quickly enough and large enough volumes that you can like dip in, read one book every couple of weeks and you'll be fine. Like, that's literally all it took. And I was able to fully read all but like one book on that Hugo list. And I didn't even know about the Hugo list.
Yeah.
The only book on that list that I haven't read is the one that's probably is the Emily Tesh book from okay. I'm just gonna go through the Hugo nominees and I'm gonna give you a quick like breakdown of what like thumbs up, thumbs down. Witch King, actually not thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up, thumbs down, something in the middle. Witch King was something in the middle for me. Martha Wells is wonderful when she writes like sorry, what's the word I'm looking for? Murder Bop. When she wrote Murder Bop, it was great. And I really enjoyed I tried to enjoy, sorry, her Raxura books. But I don't know, it wasn't as good as it could be, and I felt like Witch King was good to read, but it didn't capture me the way anything else is. But then again, like there's something unique about like this isn't a writing critique, it's just a mood critique. Witch King was just it was hidden for me. It's all about like I don't know. It's very it's not quite traditional fantasy, but it's a fantasy book. It was nice. I liked it, but it wasn't anything else. Translation State by Anne Leckie is like continuing her series. Honestly, it's still fucking banging science fiction. She does the three-part harmony kind of thing, and if you can dip into that world, you're gonna enjoy it. You're gonna love it. If you liked translation, any of the prior novels, you'll love this one. And it actually moves the like meta plot forward a little bit. This one's about a translator and that goes missing and another three new lives to like follow along. Definite thumbs up for me. The Adventures of Amina al-Sarafi is it's basically a prequel to City of Brass. If you like City of Brass, you'll like this one. So thumbs up if you like City of Brass. What was John Scalzi's book is it's a John Scalzi book. Like, what do you want from it? It's starter villain, it's funny. That's what you get. It's funny. It's thumbs up if you like funny shit. It's about someone who's like a divorce substitute li teacher living with his cats. And then his uncle Jake dies and he inherits a supervillain island. And he has to figure stuff out. And the
Interesting.
cover is basically a cat with the tagline, "Meet the new boss." In a cat, by the way, is in the suit. That was it. And then, did I forget? Some Desperate Glory. I mentioned Emily Tesh that I didn't read. The Saint of Bright Doors by Vandana Chandrasekhari is, I have it. I have not read it. It's supposed to be really good. Amali Motar from, did a quote for it, and she's like the one who did the Time War book. She's very poetic. I kind of want to read it. I haven't, like, found the headspace for it. I will. It'll happen, God willing.
Yeah.
That's it. Those are the go ahead.
I was gonna say the one that I think has got my attention most is John Scalzi, just because I loved Red Shirts. I
Yeah,
think
it
Red Shirts is actually one of the best books ever written. And I wish I could find the energy to care to read this one, because everything about the premise sounds cool. I'm so tired.
I
Insert Spider-Man, I'm so tired meme here.
yeah I that's fair. Being tired is very fair. There's like a lot going on in your life and you'll cycle back to it. Everyone eventually does. I go ahead.
As much as I would also love an opportunity to divert us a bit, because so I could talk about just how much I loved the new Godzilla Kong movie, which was, without a doubt, magnificent. And the first person I actually hear within my earshot talk about how, oh, after Godzilla Minus One, I can't take these MonsterVerse movies seriously anymore. Godzilla is at its best when it's about something. I'm going to punch. Then I'm going to suplex them into the hollow earth, and then it's going to explode because that's awesome, just like that movie was awesome.
Okay.
We should probably talk about Neren, though.
You basically managed to talk about it for sure. We'll talk about the subject of today's episode, which is a little bit of an arc in, and we're going to be talking about current events. So volume 10 content warning here. We're going to spoil stuff. We're going to talk about things that have been happening. So if you're not caught up or you haven't read this stuff, please beware. We'll try to be nice about it, but I don't think we're either of us gonna keep our tongues in. And we're not just gonna talk about like the arc, the 3-episode arc that we're talking about. We're also talking about the one that comes afterward. So it's gonna be 10.6, 10.7, 10.8, and then 10.9. And I think those 4 chapters can like merge together to create one conclusive arc that Pirate's been working on. I think it's a good arc. I enjoyed it. Some context here. 10.6, 10.06 was posted on March 6th. 10.07 was posted on March 7th. Sorry, March 10th. And on March 13th, someone on the Discord presented a theory after having read all, like, Volume 10 started, we've been reading about other people and stuff, and we finally got to Eren, and the arc was about Eren, and the 06 and 07 were about Eren's, and her being in the Frailing City of Paith, and all of the stuff that was happening. And there's this guy named Jokering Laugh, that was the username, post, "Am I the only one who thinks that this Eren is actually Neri? Question mark. Has a chat about it, talks about the possibility of it, and it laughs off." And then Evil Cookie Barrel, whoever that is, posts on Reddit after the next day on the 14th, a compilation of clues that indicate the Eren that we're seeing in 06 and 07 might actually be a Sariat lamb. At which point, the bomb drops, the Discord goes crazy, my jaw drops because I'm like, oh my God. So it's very much that moment of when I found out from Solal Wali that there was racism in at Condé Nast, which I already knew about. It's more that it's true. You can see the evidence, but you're so desperate to want something that you're kind of like ignoring the realities and you're letting it all pass by yourself. And there was so much evidence that it was not Eren, like the tone, the timbre, the events, the falling downs, all that evidence, and I could not refute any of it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where after such a major event, and there's a lot of cover, right? She was badly injured, she's a new size, she was magically irradiated, she's been through a great deal of sudden and immediate trauma, and then forced to sit with herself for like a month. And all these things come together, and you think, okay, this makes sense, it feels explained why she's so different, until the thought hits you. And the first time you think to yourself, wait, is this Eren? And once you've had that thought, everything shifts like 8 degrees to the left, clicks into place, and you just know that it's right.
The list of clues is like a mile. We'll go through the list, by the way, but it's like a mile long, and a lot of it wasn't even the not all of it covered even the stuff that I was noticing that was a thing. Because I'm always looking at like the way Pirate writes, because that's how my head thinks, rather than the actual textual like stuff, which means I missed even more things. Oh God, I hate Pirate.
Yeah. So whenever new chapters drop, I sit with my friend Hicks and do sort of like a live read, chat with each other kind of thing. And I can actually remember in, I think, 10-7, him saying, just sort of offhandedly, "Wait, is this Aaron?" And then, yeah, of course it is. And we just kind of both moved on.
Yeah.
And the way that this both suddenly developed and how quickly people jumped onto it being Neri specifically, I am a little surprised. I have to wonder if Pirate was surprised by this. Like, did Pirate expect people to figure it out quickly, or was this supposed to be a larger mystery that was supposed to go longer before, oops, everybody got it?
I mean, 10.08 basically is like a slap in the face that says, of course, it wasn't supposed to be a big mystery dummy. Because Pirate did set it up for, like, her arrival, like, Naren's arrival in Elvalon, which is the city, the headquarters of the Forgotten Wing. So there was no chance that she was going to get away without being, like, exposed at some point. It just was a matter of time before the exposure happened, especially like with the people who could figure out that it's not her. Like it's not actually Aaron, it's Naren, Neri transformed, wondrous polymorph, whatever. So 10.08 comes out and she arrives and all that's they're all and it's like a barrel roll from the start to the end where you eventually find out like explicit. Pirate wrote explicitly, included a meme, did all of that. I loved all of it, and then people were still arguing whether or not it's Eren until 10.9 dropped when we got the real Eren chapter, and then they were still arguing about whether or not it's no.
Yeah, well, and this is, I've really stayed out of it. I saw almost immediately the tone did not feel right, and I'm easily pulled into those kinds of arguments, and I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to live that life. I steered pretty heavily clear of it, but God,
So
even right now, I was about to say something vaguely inflammatory, so I'm just gonna shut up.
let's roll it back a little bit and start at the top when it comes to like what we think Pirate was trying to do here and whether they succeeded or not, and then let's jump into the list of clues and we can be like, oh God, how do we miss this? So I think Pirate was, from a narrative perspective, there was an. I was having a discussion with. I ran the ACD discussion, and I had someone like straight up go and say they did not think any of this worked narratively. They thought it was a betrayal and that Pirate had failed to meet the narrative rules and that it didn't make sense. And how could it possibly be Neri? Pirate made a mistake. There was also a lot of people saying like, well, this kind of like the they blew like Pirate cr blew a balloon up with the re-entry of Eren in 10.06, and that now that they've popped the balloon, it feels like a little like none they have no connection to any of those chapters anymore. None of them mean anything. Why even read them? They're kind of worthless now, or some variation of that. I mean, it got hyperbolic in chat
Yeah.
stuff, but not necessarily anything back. It just lost meaning to people, and because they couldn't connect with it anymore. And I was like, I didn't. How can it lose meaning? And my
I think
argument.
I'll go on.
One last, like my argument for like the. Okay, so we could talk about the meaning part second, but as far as the narrative stuff goes, I tried to like walk through what the arguments were from a narrative perspective. And for me, I'm gonna repeat what I said, which is that this was not like from a step-by-step point of view, none of it had a plot hole to it. Sylvania is known for doing ridiculously powerful magic. She's manipulative. She didn't just appear out of nowhere. She is literally the wizard that did it, but like
Yeah.
she represents a faction that is explicitly opposed to a group that is attacking Eren, and She now has very powerful manipulators in the form of the Harpy Queen, who we know is she's a queen. If you're a queen, you know how to manipulate people. And they make plans, they do things, and they oppose each other. So it was clear that her arrival portended some kind of shift. The fact that she literally is putting a finger on the scale and trying to change things, she being Sylvania, which is representing the demons and all that stuff. Clearly, there was some shenanigans that was going to happen here. Now, that part made sense. The fact that Pyre tends to be a troll and loves to, like, what's the word? Like, misdirect it from it is common enough that it makes sense for Pyre as a writer. And then when you piece forward from that point, of course, the best way to save Erin isn't just to, like, save her by shrinking her down to Feralding size, but also creating a decoy and shifting people's, like, who they think it is, and
Attention.
the like all the anger goes to one side while Erin tries to survive and build a power base on the side, or like all of that made sense to
It
me.
all makes sense. It all connects. And one thing I'll say, if it really was a huge unexplainable plot hole that made no sense, people wouldn't have guessed it so quickly and
That's
so
the other thing.
accurately.
Yeah, like
Like the clues are really clearly there. It's well laid out, hidden in plain sight, like all the best twists that change your context to the material do and should.
and
And
nearly all
this
of
is.
the hold on, one other thing. And nearly all of the evidence is given ambiguity only because we were reading week to week. If I was reading these chapters in one go as part of a book or as a collection, whatever you want to call it, it would last for like an afternoon or a couple of days if you're a slow reader, and then you're done with it, and you're like, ah ha 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 ha. But the reason it's so like explosive, so difficult to like connect with too, I think, is because we were reading week to week, and 10.06, 07, 08, and 09 came out over the course of a month. Right? I think that's what really affected things.
Yeah. And I was going to talk about like the context and connect and feeling connected to the material or not. How do I put this? I think that this really comes down to, do you feel invested in Neri and the Sarian Lambs or not? And do you feel invested in the side characters who are featuring in this or not? If you're the type of person who's not particularly interested in Ballaros, doesn't care about the Ballaros characters, if you're the type of person who doesn't particularly care about Neri or the lambs or the animals or what's going on there, I can understand not, you know. It's like suddenly you find out all this stuff is connecting over to some characters you don't care about and you feel put out, but that's a personal problem. Because this is very clearly going to be a story about Neri and the Lambs, with a lot of the Ballaros characters featuring. It was a bit of a twist that that's what it was, but it's not like this is an unconnected story and we suddenly found out it was all a dream or something, right? Which is what I feel like a lot of people are treating this like.
It's just once you address those kind of connection issues, it becomes a lot easier to like separate out and just enjoy it as a piece of like comedic pirates gotcha level stuff. And then once we get to the actual Erin chapter where she is tiny and suicidal and she like works through her all of that, I don't know if this was uncommon. I had one person tell me that they couldn't connect with the Erin in the jungle. Like, I was like, this is just this is back to volume one basics on a whole nother level, except she's depressed now. And it's like, God, there's always criticism, but I honestly thought, I rarely say about like any arc is perfectly done. I always say there's room for improvement, and Pirate is. But I think Pirate did a really fantastic job of tricking us into thinking and then giving us and then making us part of the joke instead of separate from the joke, and then allowing us to like feel that revelation, go back through it, experience the surprise, and then enjoy the real Aaron coming back and being part of it, and then like truly giving us what I think is Aaron's narrative journey in this volume 10, which is finally addressing like some of her suicidal tendencies, let's call them.
Lack of self-preservation instinct,
The lack thereof, yeah.
callous disregard for her own personal safety.
And the I think the most affecting part is that she's unable, she's looking to for she's looking for blame instead of accepting her choices. She's looking for punishment, excuse me, rather than accepting that her choices have consequences and that those consequences require her to step up and own them, because other people, like, when you make choices as a leader, when you make choices as someone, like consequential choices, oftentimes they can lead to pain and suffering, and they require some kind of loss sometimes, and Erin does not deal with any of those things very well. And she blames herself on a level that doesn't make sense. And I think hopefully what comes out of this is her, is what I've been begging for Erin Solstice to do, which is, if you're gonna be badass, own the fact that the only way to be badass isn't to like go beat the shit out of everybody. It's to be willing to step up, make the choices, and own that you did them. Even if it costs you a piece of yourself, you did that. Don't step away from it.
Yeah, and it's a story conceit that I always love because I'm sure where to put this. A lot of people. Oh God, I'm trying to think of a different story I read that gave me this very similar vibe but from a different angle, because it was very much sort of about this idea of, you go, you make the noble sacrifice for everybody. And then you just have to keep on living after that, because you don't always die when you do that thing. And sometimes, yeah, you did the thing that needed to be done, and you saved the people. And even if all of it was unambiguously good, which isn't even true here, you're living with it now, right? You still personally have gone through a lot and suffered. And add in the fact that this was such a difficult, tangled, crazy situation. It's a character arc I'm excited for.
I like this entire note section from Kylara is basically all of the evidence that Eren is, sorry, there are now two physical Erens, one that's tiny and one that's big. The big Eren is 6 feet tall and is a transformed sheep, and the small Eren is the one that we know and love and has now access to the Chamber of Secrets, or the Pavilion of Secrets. The only one that matters, by the way, is the one where at the end of 10.08, Pirate literally says, "This is not Eren. This is not Eren. Not Eren." And then literally posted the thing. Anyway, yeah, I'm just gonna say this, guys. It's not Eren. Stop arguing about it. It's not
Yeah,
Eren. The big Eren is the sheep that got transformed.
it could maybe not be Neri. That could be another trick. I don't think it is. But and here, by the way, do you know what the actual single biggest, most obvious piece of evidence that this must be a Sarient Lamb is to me?
Which is what?
Paxayr.
Yeah, oh,
The
yeah.
joy, the fucking amazing, sheer, overwhelming joy of how funny it's going to be when she realizes she swapped soul bits with a Sarient Lamb.
I
I
mean,
think that alone pays this entire plot line off.
Even in that, the like I think the line was she hadn't realized like Aaron Solstice had thus much rage inside of her, and that was like the end of the sequence with the Lucifin on that chapter. And I was like, when does Aaron have that much? I remember trying to justify it in my head. What did she change so much that now she has rage? But it's like, nope. Aaron is a ball of sadness and suicidal ideation. Why the friggin' hell would she be that angry? I mean, you could
I
be
don't
angry
know if
at
I
Sus.
think Aaron has suicidal ideation, but I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. That's not the
Yeah, we're
subject of
trying to.
this.
Yeah, let's
Yeah,
avoid that.
stay on
But,
subject. But yeah, no, that alone. And then, the war form with like the goat hooves and the horns. Oh my god, if Neri gets turned back into a tiny little Saurian, what will the tiny little Saurian war form look like? I bet it'll be adorable.
I don't think she will be transformed back. What's interesting here, though, is it also opens up another can of worms in that she's been properly transformed. And everyone, there's this subtle, like, is this correct, is this not, presumption that Naryn has a huge amount of magical protections on her, which is why they can't detect her class, they can't detect all these things. And like they can't find her on a scrying orb or via the inn thing, yet she's clearly there. Nobody has like cons other than after hot tubbing with her, having
Years.
the Frerling boy consider the fact that things don't add up. Nobody's thought about the possibility that there's no great magic and that it's not Aaron. Like, it's very Sherlock Holmesy where you're like, all of this evidence, but you if it what's the quote about like improbable things being probable?
Oh God, hey, hold on, I'm gonna butcher this, but you know what, I'm gonna have to. I know the one you're talking about, but I only remember like every third fucking word.
I literally can't remember it. Something about when you've eliminated
Oh yeah, when
the.
you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth.
Yeah, and that's basically what happens here. If you
Yeah.
eliminate like the possibilities, if you notice the things, it just becomes so logically like a black. It's not. I think anybody who reads like a lot of mysteries who would be coming in from the side. Would be able to figure this out. There's
Yeah,
so.
although I think another something that is a bit more of a mystery and that I'm very curious about and that I think could have big implications. Does a Aaron got a little squirrely whenever like the subject of Neri was kind of coming up when we finally did get the Aaron chapter? Does Aaron know?
Well, that's.
Did
Yeah, exactly. Like, how
and
much of this is something that. Sylvania, Aaron, and Neri cooked up.
The other thing that I'm kind of thinking about here, at the end of the epilogue, when the lambs are putting up, offerings to Cawine, right? And they're getting Cawine's attention and bringing Cawine to them, they have knowledge about how to do so that I almost feels goes past the initial Pawn's book that Neri read that kind of introduced this idea of faith to her, right?
Right, and the thing
So hold on,
that's.
let me finish what I'm saying here. So if Aaron's in on this, does Aaron know that what the lambs are doing? Could she even possibly approve of it? Because how did Neri get word to them about
Well,
this?
that's what I was about to
And
say. Like, that maybe they didn't. Maybe there's a schism somewhere around here.
well, I think it might be entirely possible that as part of agreeing to do all of this, Neri has gotten that information to send to the Lamb so they can start entreating on Cawine to help them. Which, God help me, I do actually kind of like Cawine at times. I think that anything that helps the Lamb out's got to be all right. Although, once those lambs get leveled, blood is going to flow through the streets. an entire continent may be subverted. Imagine if they get infiltrator skills and like you have this cabal of powerful lands with potentially mind-affecting skills, all in position in courts and in royal places all over the world. It's gonna get ugly.
I'm gonna say this straight up. I don't think that the lambs that are praying to Kawain are have anything to do with Mary. I think that they're a separate faction that are seeking like some version of what Neri is trying to achieve. And I think Neri sort of represents another faction that's trying to achieve it without the dead, like going to the dead gods. And I don't believe for a second that after everything that happened with Caligma, that Eren would tolerate any kind of connection to any of the other dead gods. It just would not work. And to argue against it, I'm just, this is my belief, not
That's
trying
the
to
big
like
flaw
justify
in
it.
it. I'll admit that's the big flaw in it. I am not 100% certain on this. Although, no matter what Eren's involvement is or isn't, I'm personally convinced that the lambs that are praying to Cawine are directly connected to Neri in some way. I don't think that this is a schism. I think this is a direct result of the information Neri has learned and sent back to them.
I think that it is part of the information. I just don't think that it was sanctioned necessarily by like by Neri or by any of the people that Neri is drawing on. I think that there could be a schism. Also, the reality of like having a Sereot lamb that can speak and move around and communicate something that they Neri explicitly said was one of the most horrible aspects of being trapped in a body that is so weak, is going to be interesting. I hope Pirate does more to flesh out the aspects of like body horror where Neri went from being in the body that she was, that is her natural form, even if it's not something she loves, to a human that has all these advantages. And yes, she still can't level, but at least she can move around. And now she has all this magic from a deal she made with Paxir. It's just like, there's a lot that Pirate refused to dip into because you had to keep the mystery rolling of whether it's not Eren. That could, not could, I think should be explored. I hope we get to see all of that because I would love to see and understand more from Urk's point of view, the ape, the ape, and from Neri's point of view about like the system. It's like that whole business of like who gets to be part of the system, who doesn't, and how those who are outside of it in the in-world suffer because they're not part of it. And they're never really given a choice. Or are they given a choice? And like what's going on there? I think we have to wrap it up, right? We're at like 58 minutes.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And I apologize for anyone who thought we were going to discuss the validity of the theory, because there's not much to discuss.
No, there's really not much to discuss about the validity of the theory. It's just wonderful to see, like, I think my final thought on all this is it's nice to see pirates enjoying and trying new ways of, like, or at least working on new ways to, like, fuck with our readers. It means they're still enjoying themselves with, even though it's been 13 million words and whatnot.
Also, it's a great opportunity to stretch the writing muscles and create a unique, different scenario. Because I'll be honest, now that I have seen this choice, I almost feel like the expected story of damaged Eren meeting the UN and going to hang out with Nears for a while would have been, I don't want to say boring, boring's not the word I'm looking for, but it wouldn't have been, had this same unexpected wow energy that this has. This is safe. It would have been safe, and this is very unsafe in a way that makes me think that Pirate is still trying to find new and unexpected ways to torture us.
Yeah, Brava, Pirate Abba, thank you for the fun, and we'll see you all next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to No Killing Goblins. The music on No Killing Goblins was composed by System Glitch. They can be found at youtube.com/systemglitch. You can get in touch with us via our Twitter at No Killing Goblin or email us at nokillinggoblins with an S at gmail.com.